Hey, are you going to play the music? This is the Caffeinated Risk Summer Show with your hosts, Tim McCreet and Doug Leese.
Here we are. It's officially the longest day of the year slash first day of summer, and it's our summer show because it was some weird tradition we started completely by accident. Yeah. But why not make it a thing? So welcome to the third annual.
Yeah, there we go. The third annual.
Hard to believe, though, eh?
Yeah, I like that. That's good.
This time, we're going to crowdsource our guest. You sent this report over to me, and maybe just because, you know, I'm bored from not reading for my master's thesis because I'm done.
I was going to say, you got time now, right, in between, right? So
let's send him a report and see if he gobbles it up. And yes, I took the bait. So what we're looking at here is the 2023 Cyber Defense Report. And I swear to God, I've never heard of this report before, but where did you dig this up?
So this came through my membership with ISC Squared, right? And it was one of those, and don't forget to download this. And I'm like, okay. So, you know, again, I'm just like clickbait. Let's go click on this and see what it does. So I've heard of CyberEdge before. So the CyberEdge group's been around for, man, I think a decade or more. They've been running this report for at least the last 10 years.
Yeah. Long time.
I remember I saw the first iteration of Oda came. I saw one of the 2 years in a row. I think I caught the 2016 and 2017 version. So it kind of gave me some insight into where the industry was going. That was around the time that Rochelle Lawyer, myself, and the other folks within ASS were looking at ESRM. And it really struck me that they were asking some risk-based questions back then. I mean, the answers were horrific, and there was literally no response for some of them. But I thought, you know, at least you're giving it a shot, right? You're asking questions about where security practitioners see the, you know, the profession, where they see the market, and then what are some of the things that are concerning them. And what I liked about, you know, this year's report that came out for 2023, if you can believe it, there's some positive notes from, you know, the practitioner's perspective, that they actually see a change in some of the trends and a more positive approach to how security practitioners are looking at their job, but also the threats that they're facing and how they're reducing some of the threats. So I thought that was kind of cool. I tried to put my Doug hat on and realize, okay, what's the group of people they're talking to, and what's the base? And it's a statistically relevant sample of security professionals. It's been around for well over a decade.
Yes.
The way it came out and the data that's presented, I thought it was really interesting because a couple of things caught my eye. I don't know if they caught yours, but the one that I really saw was this one point that IT security leaders now have a seat at the table, but with the board. And I thought that was interesting to read because that's the first time that I've seen in some of these surveys where they actually talk about, you know, folks like you and me having a chance to actually on a regular basis sit and talk to the board about cyber risk. And this is something you and I've been talking about as our summer version rolls around for 3 years. Isn't it one of the things that's most important from an ESRM perspective is this idea that we need to be able to present to the board? Mm-hmm. And it feels like we're actually seeing some traction where you've got over 50% of the respondents say at least on an annual basis, they get a chance to talk to the board about risk. I don't know. I thought that was kind of a cool stat to work on.
Yeah. And if we think back a couple episodes ago with Jack, he mentioned, you know, for a long time we've been clamoring for board level attention for risk. And the good news is we're getting it.
Yeah, yeah.
The bad news is we're getting it. Well, ISC Squared obviously is going to be biased and say, hey, you need more qualified people.
Sure. Yep.
But I've been at this long enough. I mean, if somebody said, if I can give you some money for gear or for people, I will always take people.
Always. Yep. Always.
And training those people is so difficult because making it realistic is very time consuming. And, you know, this whole concept we were talking about just before the show of cyber ranges, even the one I build for B-sides each year, some of the people that get on, it's the first time they've ever actually done some of these hands-on things, and yet they're advising people on how to protect against it. And
yeah,
if you truly want to know about what the risk is you're signing your company up for, you should maybe understand, how easy is this? How hard is this?
Yeah.
These are relevant points in the risk equation.
Yep.
You know, because if you need to be some, you know, world level hacker to pull this off, and there's little monetization opportunity for what you're protecting, is a $500,000 firewall genuinely necessary? Think and know.
Exactly. But we make those decisions, or you should be looking at those types of decisions all the time, because I think that's where, you know, this idea that you need to really understand. And again, I go back to the whole, it's that whole concept of ESRM. It's what's the value of the asset, right? And is that asset actually going to impact your operational, you know, your operational state? Is it something you need to be operating every day for you to be successful? And if it is, or if it's not, then, you know, to your point, am I going to spend $500,000 on a firewall to protect? No, I'm going to spend that money somewhere else. I'm going to look for something different, right, that I can put the money towards or risk to reduce. So you're right. I thought it was interesting that they identified that in the report, that there's still, you know, there's still discussions and questions around where the investment for cyber needs to be, where the reduction for risk needs to be. And I don't know if we're ever going to have enough people, right, in the security space. We had board meetings. We're still having them this week for ASIS. And in my tour as president this year, it still keeps coming back to, there's never enough of us to do the work that we have to do. There just isn't. And I think that's the risk that we're always going to have to bring up to executives, is that we're never going to have the people that we need. So what else do we have in our bag of tricks to help reduce that risk?
Well, I think now is the time they need to be rethinking some of that. What I've been seeing is the people that are investing in technology that works together are sort of getting that. So the secure email gateway and sandboxing and all that.
Yes.
I think pretty much everything that you can buy now from the big, you know, the big providers, whether it's Azure or Google or Proofpoint or any of these guys, they all have a sandboxing thing, and they all have some sort of evaluation. Every link that's in there, they go test it out and they look at it. Before that email's ever delivered, it's been scrutinized 9 ways from Sunday.
Right.
But even in that rather lengthy process, the odd thing does get through. You know, if you want an eye opener, you should just watch how much of that stuff is dropped at the edge, right? It's astounding that people keep trying and we just keep throwing it away, and a little bit trickles in. And then a couple hours later, the big hive mind that's running whatever platform, you know, because 8,000 other people also got that mail, and a few people have figured out this is malicious. Well, the magic cloud thing, and I'm being vague because every platform is different. I don't want to use keywords, but these systems, these platforms are set up to collect from everybody, and then once they learn something is bad, they spread the word really quickly, and all these gateways get a notification.
Yep. Shared value of what they see from Intel. Yeah, you bet. Yep.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, if you want to take advantage of a global perspective, these big platforms may be a little pricier, but you'll see the benefit.
Yep.
Because if it's happening to you, it's probably happening to 100 other people, and you know the bad guys haven't got. It's not your turn yet, so you might as well get that all cleaned up first.
Yeah.
But what I've seen is that a lot of companies, because we're talking about risk management here, that's really our focus, is it's almost like they bought a sports car and they're afraid to even take it out of the driveway.
Right.
Like a lot of these tools, if you configure them, after the hive mind says this email is bad, it looks through and goes, oh, darn, I delivered that to 27 people. it can actually reach into their mailboxes and grab that message and remove it.
Exactly. Yep.
And I'm sure you've sat through meetings, I know I have, where they say, well, what about if it removes an email? That was like, yeah, that could happen for sure. What if it's wrong? I've seen them. They do get it wrong sometimes. Oh, that shouldn't have been quarantined. Turns out it wasn't bad after all.
Mm-hmm.
Where risk is about measuring the impact to the organization. What is the impact of a missed email to your quarterly returns? Typically nothing, because if it was that important, they wouldn't have sent it by email in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
They would have called you, or they would have said, did you get my email? Because you need to look at that now.
Exactly. Yep.
Those sort of measures are taken when it's business impacting like that.
Yeah.
And you look at that and it's like, oh, the magic machine accidentally gobbled that one up. Let's send it again, or let's unquarantine it, or whatever you got to do, right? And you compare the time spent dealing with digging up one that should have got through that didn't, twice a year, that couldn't just be handled by, could you send it again?
Right. Yep.
And compare that to the alternative of, well, we want our analysts to look at everything and make sure that everything's mm-hmm. kosher or block it.
Yep.
And now you're measuring that in person months over the year, and they're digging out emails. But the worst thing is now they're potentially being exposed to other emails that they shouldn't have seen and things like that.
Correct.
Yeah. Bigger problem to me. Like, I think the manual process is actually more dangerous to your organization than just letting this work. To me, if you can use the technology to remove the skill required to do the job, that might be one of the ways that we can solve the lack of skilled personnel, is you don't have to be as good as you used to be.
Oh, I agree. And I mean, and that's where, you know, for me, that decision would be easy. It's, I will accept that we may have to manage a couple of dozen manual interventions every year. I'm good with that. Now I can actually take those team members and go do something a little more beneficial, right? I can actually look at things from a different lens now, a different risk perspective. Maybe I'm going to turn them loose on, you know, how do I train my users to be better at the work that they do? So maybe they can focus on some user education awareness scenarios that they can work on for training, or maybe I can go back and focus on reducing the risks that face my attack surface. Or what if I started looking at my third parties and spend a little more time doing risk assessments on those, right? That's like, those are all the things that, you know, I saw this in the report, that this idea of the confidence factor. And that's one of the things they talked about, is this confidence, that there was a couple of things that the folks that responded to the survey were, you know, least confident about. And it was brand protection, security awareness and education, this concept of third-party risk management, and then how do I reduce, you know, my attack surface? And I think what you just talked about, Doug, is if I actually let the platform do a greater majority of the work, can I take those resources, and instead of having to be, you know, that engineering ninja to go sort through that stuff, can you go help out train other users? Can you help me do a risk assessment of that third party we just brought on, that we gave admin access into one of our servers? That kind of, you know what I mean? Like, that kind of stuff to me makes more sense to spend the time to reduce the risk. If that's what we're aiming for, let the machine do what it can, accept that there's going to be some intervention. And then can I redistribute that skill set or that time doing something else? I would hope so. Right?
Yeah. Well, I think another takeaway from that, or another concept, is that if I'm reducing the skill requirement, and when I say skill, I don't mean that people operating these platforms, even though it's a web browser, trust me, it's a HTML interface into an application or a computer system, and you can still foul things up horribly with two mouse clicks.
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, I think I probably would be one of those guys. Yeah, that'd be me, right? So,
yeah, you know, and doing it on a command line doesn't actually make you cooler. Well, I think it does, but apparently I'm in the very slim majority there. No, but if you go the other way, because again, the headlines are there's 3 to 4 million jobs going unfilled in cybersecurity globally. And it doesn't matter which survey, either that they're all drinking the same Kool-Aid or it's a real thing. But it feels like a real thing to me. And just judging by the people we've been interviewing, it's really hard to get deep bench talent.
Yep.
A lot of these people that were laid off of these tech companies were in non-core capacities, not necessarily tied to security. But the other thing I've noticed we've had a couple guests who've talked about this, Larry Whitesides and Martin Donnell, and both reaching in to non-traditional places to get people to do this. And there's a real difference the way a hardcore, I do it by command line, Linux is better than anything, and what, you know, like, no, I build my own firewalls, thank you, kind of person.
Yeah, yeah.
And somebody who used to be a financial controller. You know, they're going to definitely think about business impact entirely differently. Somebody that's focused on how the business is operating can live with it's encrypted or it's not encrypted.
Right.
Yeah. Versus the hardcore person who wants to debate the merits of SHA-256 versus SHA-1 file hashing.
Yeah.
Encrypted or not encrypted.
Yeah, I'm good. Yeah.
Even to make risk more relevant, I think we need to bring people in that can understand that language. Because I was looking at one of the surveys, and they were complaining about the shortcoming. I forget which section. I think section 3, where they're ranking all the stuff.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yep.
And they said 3.56 out of 5. So, you know, what is that? 72% or something. Felt that they were lacking management support or awareness. And yet they're getting lots of money. And they're getting gear. Sounds like they believe you and they want to help you. So is it the messenger now, not the message?
I think that's a good point.
Because they got the message, they wrote the check, right?
Yeah, you've got the gear because we're seeing them buying more gear. And then, I mean, and then we go back to the other point that was in the survey, is that over 50% now, at least annually, right? Annually, quarterly, or monthly, have an opportunity to speak in front of the executives. Mm-hmm. So what are you saying when you're in front of them? If earlier in the survey, it's we're having problems getting the message across. So for me, there's a bit of a conflict there. And it comes back to,
those two things don't line up. And I think
they don't line up, right?
But is it because most of the people filling these roles have come up through the technology side and they still think that? Back to the hashing example, right? You know, let's discuss the merits of this cipher set versus it's encrypted or it's not. That's our fault. I think that's our fault, right? I think that's,
and we need to own that. Potentially it is, right? And this is where, you know, and I've joked about this for years. Well, actually, ever since you and I started working together, that I'm not that technical guy. I don't have that skill set anymore. I made that very clear to every executive who's ever hired me that, look, if you want to debate the merits of the 256 algorithm versus SHA-1, I'm out. Like, it sounds like a lovely debate, but I offer nothing into it because I don't have that technical skill set. I'm the person that wants to make sure it's encrypted or not. I think where we may have missed some of this is, you know, we hear lots about we need to train and educate our users more. They're our weakest link. Again, that, you know, the same common phrase. We saw that as well in this survey, and we've heard it from others. But the one part that we keep forgetting is we still have to train the cybersecurity executives to look at it from a business lens. And I don't think we're doing a good enough job of that.
The information's out there on how to make a compelling message. There's creative writing classes and, you know, God bless ISC Squared. You can actually get CPEs for taking a creative writing class if you want.
Absolutely.
It falls into domain B or whatever, but they recognize to be a good practitioner, you need to bring a lot of different skills to the table. And the most important one is, do they understand and believe you?
And that's the key, right?
Because otherwise they're not going to change.
Exactly, right? This concept of becoming, and I got another great book, right? Becoming a Trusted Advisor. Yeah, there we go, right? So this idea that...
No way.
Yeah, no, actually it is, right?
That there's a book on that.
Yeah, How to Become the Trusted Advisor Field Book. So it's... What I liked about it, so the book mirrors a lot of the stuff that we've been talking about these last 3 years on ES around this idea that for an executive to appreciate the message that you're providing, you need to be seen as trusted, right? And that means trust means different things to different people. And it's on you as the one providing the information to demonstrate and earn the trust. So appreciate that. But one of the things that I found, and you talked about learning how to get the message across. When I was at the provincial government and when I've worked with in the public sector serving citizens, the thing that I had to get really good at and brutally effective at was getting a briefing note done in 45 minutes. Go.
Wow.
A complex topic that you had to present to an executive that was either going to the floor of the house or had to present to, into chambers or had to provide updates to an audit committee. You had 45 minutes when you were called upon it. So you had to take the skill of identifying the impact of a potential risk to the organization and putting it in a business language where it could be represented in what would turn out to be at most 3 pages. Go.
Mm-hmm.
We had to get so efficient with it. So what that gave me was, one, baptism of fire, because I think the first attempts I had were just miserable failures because, oh my God, they were just, I felt like I was a kid coming back from junior high English class because everything was red, right? It was just, all of it was just red marks. And I'm like, you're just like, okay, I'll fix that for you right now. No, we've got this. We fixed it for you, Tim. Okay, thank you, right? So I actually kept a couple of them over the years just to go back and, to remember how was I trying to present the risk. It's not that you're selling the risk. You're actually trying to get to the very concept of what we're doing with ESRM. This is what we uncovered. Here's the potential impact. What would you like to do with this? That's really what the three stages, right? And it was to get that executive action at the end of the third stage, was to make the business decision whether to accept it or mitigate the risk. And it was, man, those were just tough lessons to go through. And even presenting in front of audit committee or being an auditor and providing that insight back to a client or back to a ministry or back to a department and explaining it in a way that they actually understood it. You always had the attachments and the appendix with the technical details, but here is the risk. This is what could happen. Here's what you need to do to fix it. So it, mm-hmm. it really came down to trying to get that three-part story into an acceptable language where people can look at this and go, I agree. So I'm wondering, you read over some of the contents of the survey and even others that you and I've read over the years, have we not figured out that magic formula yet to get that message across? You may be getting the gear, you may be getting others, but I mean, have you actually earned the first part, which is, have I actually got the trust of the executive so that they actually look at me as that trusted advisor and that when I come to you with this, I'm not always going to ask for money. Maybe I just want to ask a change in procedure or just say, hey, if you really want to do this, here are the pitfalls of if we want to get on this path.
Right? Yeah. Or I'll take those funds and I'm going to build you a resilient solution that works across your enterprise.
Even better. Yep. Even better.
So I can't tell you which thing's going to get smoked in the next year, but based on previous history, you can assume this much damage every year.
Yep.
Okay. Great. Just call it collateral damage, wear and tear, operational expense, whatever bucket you need for your accounting, I need this much money to repair things that are going to break.
Yep. Yep.
And if I invest in this thing, I can get your time to recover down to X. And what you might find, and I had on my notes, because I really did go through the entire report and made notes on all of it. We do seem in the organizations, especially when they're talking about the hybrid cloud stuff, mm-hmm. one of the biggest problems is you're trying to keep a foot in both ponds.
Right. Yeah.
And even though cloud services may appear expensive, what I think a lot of people miss is that there's a lot more included in that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, when I'm doing stuff for my lab, I shop at the cheapest VPS provider that I can find.
Yeah, exactly.
Because I'm building it all myself, and I actually want people to come on and try and wreck it and stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that's okay. But if I was advising an organization to build a web application, I wouldn't actually even build a web server now.
Right.
I would use one of these solutions where the database is a service.
Yeah.
I don't need a database server. I need rows in a database. I need something I can run a structured query against. Oh, I need a web application firewall in front of that. No, I could just buy a web app firewall service and you guys could keep on top of whatever the new hotness is for web attacking and just block all that stuff. And, you know, full disclosure, Caffeinated Risk is on one of those services. And I get little emails here and there and say, oh, we updated this plugin and we did that for you and all the rest. And I get about 20 alerts a week about people trying to break in and we block them. And we just like, that's great. Carry on.
That's awesome. Yep.
How many businesses still need to maintain their own web servers for what I would say are predictable needs, you know? Mm-hmm. Well, we need to do an application, right? You need a web tier, you need a protection layer for people messing around with your input fields. You need some data validation functions. All of these are things that you can buy now from these cloud services. And there was a complaint in the report about visibility into these things.
Right.
And it's like, well, if you bought the thing that they're selling, if you fully embrace the cloud and the modern way of delivering this, a lot of those observability features are baked right into it.
Correct.
You don't need to buy your own firewall and stick it in front of it. You can use the one they sell you.
Yep.
And if you now use their data service and you use a couple other things and you chain them together, yes, it costs you a little bit of money, but it's delivered very quickly and it all works together. And when they figure out something new, it just gets turned on. But now my website administrator could actually be a former finance person,
right,
who's going to be super valuable in articulating risk conversations and putting a financial lens on them.
Yep.
Whereas the person who can write Nginx snippets in his sleep is going to deliver some weird message that nobody understands.
Exactly. We talk about that concept of diversity is that we're seeing now with the advent of these services. But, again, for our listening audience, you know, caveat emperor, you still need to be an educated buyer when you're picking up a service and you still need to understand the types of risks that you want to address. But that the offshoot of it or this, you know, unrecognized value that comes out of looking at these types of services that are available now is that you're exactly right, Doug. I can maybe refocus that skill set to do something more value add, or I can become a more diverse approach to my security program and bring in extra skill sets and folks who may not have had, you know, the traditional technical approach to security and coming up through the ranks to get to that space. I can bring in someone with a finance background or a marketing perspective, or even someone who's got an insurance background that understands the concept of risk and impact to the organization. And they can help me explain the posture that we have. What's the impact if something goes wrong? And then, you know, you mentioned this great idea of resilience. What do I need to have in place in case, you know, platform A goes sideways? What have I got for platform B? Can I pick up and carry on and still serve my stakeholders with the same service that they expect to see? And that's where, you know, it comes back to how do I use some of the technology out there now to create that resilient approach to my program, as opposed to relying on 3 million new security professionals coming out of where? I don't know. When? I have no idea. What if we started looking at using a more diverse workforce and relying on some of the great technologies we've put into place lately? I think that's a way better approach.
Yeah, because resilience is a valid risk mitigation strategy.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
If it breaks, I will rebuild it, or I'll go buy a new one that was half the price and twice as good.
Exactly. Yep, exactly. Isn't that funny?
All right.
You finally get around to that space, and now here we are.
Yeah, that's good. Well, I think we covered a lot of stuff. Happy summer. And
happy summer, everybody. Yeah.
We got a couple of guests lined up for the next few episodes, so we decided to do the summer episode early. Thanks again, and I really appreciate you sending this report out. I'm going to go look for a couple more of them.
Cool.
And maybe we should include the link to to this, as well as that how to be a trusted advisor.
Yep, absolutely. Thanks for listening to the latest podcast from Caffeinated Risk. Make sure you visit our website, caffeinatedrisk.com, to stay up to date on what we've been working on. Our website has bios of our podcast guests, posts about topics we're passionate about, and even a library reference material we find valuable in the work we do every day. And don't forget to subscribe to Caffeinated Risk on your favorite podcast service. This way, you'll be notified when we release our next podcast, and you can listen to our previous guests just in case you missed them. Thanks so much for listening to Caffeinated Risk.